Hey, shut that door. I'm recording the third episode of the podcast. Yo, yo, what it do? It's Cates Creates Podcast, man, episode 3. I'm your host, Greg Cates, a.k.a. Gak, but you already knew that. Got a special guest on this episode today. This special guest has played a major part in my life, especially over the past, like 2 years, I would say. So I made a jump to Greensboro from my hometown, Burlington, North Carolina, which is only like 30 minutes away. But Greensboro just being a bigger city and like catering more towards what I do within fashion and graphics and marketing and stuff like that. And so I just needed to be in a bigger city like Greensboro. And once I arrived, man, this special guest just like welcomed me in with open arms, put me on game to a lot of stuff within the city. But then, you know, in the grand scheme of things, put me on game as far as like business goes, and more specifically in the vintage world. So that's something I've always been into. I've always had an eye for vintage. If you've listened to my interviews, if you have listened to other podcast episodes, or if you've just been following me, you know that like I'm into vintage. I just have the eye for that. So yeah, man, I didn't know a lot until I met Lito. Like, he started putting me on game as far as you know, just about like single stitch, double stitch, you know, when certain tees were made, certain tags, you know, where to find certain things. So this guy has just been, in my eyes, he's like a vintage. He's like one of the best. Like, he's like, I think that especially in North Carolina, you have to, you know, tip your head off to this guy. I feel like he's like a pioneer as far as getting the vintage community like flowing as heavy as it is right now in North Carolina. I think he's at the forefront of that. So I wanted to bring him on to just really just provide some value to not only people who are into vintage, but just entrepreneurs in general, because he says a lot of things that are just like generic across the board. Like, they don't necessarily have to be catered to a specific audience. It's just free game for whoever. So yeah, like I said, it's a very good episode. And without further ado, Lito, my boy Carlito Ross, is a special guest. And the first, I think, like 8 minutes of our episode, I had to cut just because the audio sounded really funny, and it was gonna annoy you guys. So I cut off the first, like I said, I think it was like 8 or 9 minutes, but everything after that is pretty smooth. So without further ado, man, let's get into it.
We did that pop-up, went super well, and then maybe 6 months later he called me back in and he was like, yo, I didn't realize how many people you could draw off of your name, so how would you feel about, you know, taking over half of the store on a permanent basis? So, you know, it's just like trial and error. You throw an idea out there, and if it lands and everybody around feels the energy of it, the world will kind of like do what it's supposed to do.
Exactly.
And everything else happen for you.
Most definitely.
Like, you know, you kind of just got to roll with the energy that the world provides. Like, you know, they'll let you know if you're doing right and if your merchandise is hidden or whatever like that. The people are the judge. You're not the judge. You can't say, everything I got is so fire, I know it's going to sell. Mm. You got to let the people say that for you.
Facts.
You know? So that's kind of what happened for me, bro. I did one pop-up. It was successful. And then now I've been in business at the same place I did my pop-up, the first one in Greensboro, for 3 years now. So
wow.
That's how it kind of developed.
So with you having all those pieces, like, what percentage would you say, like, were, like, straight just heaters, like, straight grails?
So that was the interesting part, because in the beginning when I was thrifting, I was just grabbing stuff.
You know, right. What That's what, like, I figured. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't really like I didn't focus in on one thing. Like, it would change by week. Like, 1 week I would go in and I would find a whole Christian Dior sweatsuit. And I would be like, you know what? Like, now that I know these are out there, I'm looking for these specifically when I go out. So, you know, for that whole month, I would just be looking for Dior sweatsuits, and then I would have two, then I would have three, then I would have four, then I would have five. And I'm like, okay, word, you know, I got five Dior sweatsuits. That's fire. Like, I'm going to put these up, clean them up, you know, whatever. And so that kind of was like the thing for me in the beginning wasn't like, what do I like? It was like more what is out here. You know what I'm saying?
Got you. Okay.
You know, because once you find one thing, you're determined to find it again or a different variation.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Most definitely.
You know, because I went from Dior sweatsuits to like, okay, well, then I found a Givenchy sweatsuit. So I'm like, okay, I want to find these now. So it's like once you kind of, once you kind of catch wind of what's out there, then you start to develop that little hunt for it.
So yeah, that gives you a little spark
for that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, like, I'm always been a hip-hop fan, so if I saw anything hip-hop related, I was grabbing that. If I saw anything Tommy or Polo related that was good, I was grabbing that. But, like, in the beginning, when I first started thrifting in this area, I was looking for, like those Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like, button-up shirts that were just, like, crazy printed, like, 90s crazy printed.
Right.
Like, that was, like, my first real, like, I was like, yo, these are crazy. Like, I just want to be rocking these. I remember when, like, Fresh Prince was rocking them. I just wanted to just grab all of these.
Yeah.
And so I was grabbing those, you know, like, it's just, you kind of develop a thing for what you can find. Like, once you start finding it, you know your area has it, then you start looking for them specifically. So I would say, like, maybe 30 to 40% of what I had was, like, bangers. And then 60 to 70% of what I had was, like, guaranteed sales.
Word.
You know, like, and, you know, I'm talking about, like, guaranteed sale price range for me is, like, 40 to 60.
Okay, gotcha.
That's, like, the guarantee. That's the price range in vintage that nobody can really pass. Like,
right.
When if it's between, like, 40 to 65, they're like, all right, that's solid.
For sure. Yeah, you know, for sure.
And then when you cross that threshold of, like, 75 to, like, anything over that, they're like, it gotta be good.
For sure. Gotta be a banger, yeah.
It gotta be good. It gotta be a banger. So I would say, like, 60 to 70% of what I had was, like quality store fillers, what keeps the lights on, what makes everybody happy.
Yeah.
And then the other 30 to 40% was like, all right, I might need to do some more research on these because these are a little bit more crazy.
I got you. That's wild. So, as far as, like, building that pop-up shop that you did, I'm assuming you had hella grills at that pop-up, that very first pop-up shop that you did.
Yeah, SneakerCon, what I did was, I wasn't sure what the vintage climate was like in our area. So what I did was, I got, like, the top-tier pieces from each department. So if it was Tommy, I got my best Tommy pieces. If it was Dior, I got my best Dior pieces. If it was rap tees, I brought my best rap tees.
Got you. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And I just did, like, a run of each thing that was, like, vintage and, like, at the highest point of vintage at the time. And I just put it all on one rack to just kind of, like, test and see what hit, what stuck in our area.
Got you.
And, you know, it was like, at that time, I was, like, the only one selling rap tees. This is before, like, all the other stores came up and
right.
started developing and stuff like this.
Right.
So, like, but, yeah, the rap tees would sell. The NASCAR All Over prints would sell. You know, your signature Tommy pieces would sell. None of the designers sold at all. And so that's what kind of, like, I was like, all right, cool. So I'm going to get more rap tees. I'm going to get more NASCAR. And I'm going to get more Tommy out of the stores, and then I'm going to do my next pop-up and have it centered around that.
Got you. As far as, like, the one in Greensboro, that was the same way? You basically just brung out, like, the heat?
As far as when?
The pop-up shop in Greensboro.
Oh, yeah, Greensboro was all fire. Like, Greensboro was kind of like, I was like, you know what? Like, if I ever was to do a store in this area, I want them to know what type of stuff I would bring to the table.
Okay, I got you.
You know what I'm saying? So that one was all fire. And it was interesting because as successful as it was in the, I was there for 3 days. I maybe saw 20 people in that whole entire time, bro. Like maybe, like I'm saying, like it could have been about 10 to 15 people total that spent, and maybe saw about 20 to 25 total people, which isn't a lot of people for a three-day pop-up.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's really, because me and you just did a pop-up, and it was probably 100 people.
Exactly,
in
right.
In one day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I had maybe 10 to 15 people pull up during the whole weekend and shop, but what sparked the interest in Faheem to let me be a part of the store is the sale margins. You know, like anybody that stepped in the building spent 100 to 200. So you don't have to see 100 people if everybody's coming in spending 200.
No, most definitely. Most definitely.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's not necessary. You don't have to see 100 people.
Facts.
So with 15 people come in and maybe everybody's spending two or more, you know, he's looking at it like, shit, like he can really do some numbers in this building.
Yeah,
like,
facts.
You know, like, off of stuff that's thrifted, by the way. Like, everything I'm selling is thrifted. So it's nothing in there that I bought on resale or nothing.
Right.
So you're seeing everything that's been thrifted over the years finally getting the light of day and moving at these margins that are crazy. Like, you know, shirts in there that sold for $300 or $400 individually. So, you know, like, that type of stuff is what sparked his interest. He's like, okay, this dude might be on to something.
Right.
You know, like, he might really... If they're right, there might be like a little bit of a need for this in the city.
Right. He was right. I mean, he definitely made a wise move of bringing you in, because like he saw something and you proved him right.
Right. And that's the thing about black business, is that's our luxury that we have. Like, most of them, you just got to ask the questions. You know, you got to be willing to listen and, you know, like, actually not, you know, like, don't over talk people. Let them talk to you sometimes. They might give you some information that you're needing, and you're just too busy talking to even receive it.
That's good.
So you got to be willing. You got to be willing to have those conversations. Like, a lot of the conversations I was having back in those times was just listening. I was willing to just listen and hear what people had to say, and you know, that led me into a storefront.
That's dope. That's too dope. Well, let's dive into the evolution a little bit, because you were saying when you first arrived in North Carolina, like, the vintage community was like pretty non-existent. So now, like, it seems like North Carolina, like, vintage seems to be like a look in North Carolina right now. So can I just, me being like a fan of yours and a huge supporter, and watching from a distance, like, it seems like you have played a major factor in the growth of like the vintage community here. But what do you think? Like, do you think it was a particular person, or you think particular people, particular things? Like, what made that change? And what, like, well, first of all, like, when was it? And then, like, what made that, like, spark to kind of getting people on that wave of vintage? Like, what do you think that was, and when was that?
Yeah, I think the spark kind of happens when, you know, when these major corporations, you know, start to see us really, really developing something that's like getting larger than life. So you have stores like PacSun, you have stores like Urban Outfitter, you have stores like Forever 21, and are the original bootleg pieces that we are finding, and they're selling for like astronomical numbers, like ridiculous. These companies are going on eBay and they're saying like, wow, these guys are selling Snoop Dogg tees for $1,000. Let's reprint a million of these shirts and just sell them for $20, you know?
Sell
them for $20 at all of our locations, and the kid that can't pay $1,000 will come and pay $20. So I think the evolution as far as like nationwide is like something like that. But as far as our area is concerned, I think it has a lot to do with just like the mall, you know, like you have people that finally get over that phase of like going to the mall and buying something that's one of 20.
Right.
You know, and
right.
they find that thing. They find you. They find me. They find like different individual sellers that have just that one piece that if they get it in time, nobody else is going to have it.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? I think that is what really, like, North Carolina grips to stuff like that. Being one of one and being the first.
Being the first, yeah.
You know, like, that's something that North Carolina is kind of, like, I've learned to know. That's, like, what sparks their interest.
Got you.
Being the first to have something.
Got you.
You know.
I agree. I definitely agree.
Yeah, it's just, like, I feel like it's an individuality thing. Like, it's one of those, like, you know, if you, like, everybody that found my store was like, yo, like, I finally found a spot that the homies don't know about. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's exclusive. It's appointment only. Like, I'm not going to tell nobody about this. You know,
yeah.
Like, that's kind of like how everybody's first encounter to the store
was. It's funny that you say that because, you know, my roommate Maul, when I first brought Maul to the store, like, he called, like, two people as we were walking out to tell them, like, yo, I got this store y'all don't even know about. You know what I'm saying? Like, brag that, like, yo, like you were just saying, like, to let people know, like, I'm the first. So, yeah, that's definitely a wave here in North Carolina for sure.
Bro, it's just a thing. Like, it's like, you know, in business, you have to spark interest and you have to keep interest. Like, you know, because if I go to the mall and I find a store that's cool, I'm going to be like, all right, cool, I'm going to come check them out. But then when I start to see that every piece that I cop, there's another five people that look at that piece and know where to go find it, go cop it, now it's not special anymore.
Mm.
So, you know, with shops like mine and the other vintage shops across the country, you go to those stores and you find it and nobody else knows about it and you end up getting a piece that nobody else can get, that makes you rush back for that excitement.
Mm.
You know, like, that keeps that excitement at a high because it's like, all right, what piece am I going to get today that nobody else is going to be able to have? Instead of, what piece am I going to get today and my homie's going to find out exactly where I got it from and go buy it.
Right.
It's like a whole, it's a lot that goes into it, man. Like, that's why I curate all my clothes, like, so carefully because I'm not looking for three or four of the same item. I'm always looking for that one item.
Gotcha.
You know, that one item. And if I get a double up of an item or something like that, then, you know, it's very rare for it to happen. But if that does happen, it's spread out. You know, it's not like I got it and then I got it again the next week. Like, I remember you hit me yesterday about a tee. And I was like, yeah, if I get it again, I'll let you know. But the last one I had was a year ago. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So,
you know, with vintage, you just never know. It could be a year or it could be 10 years before I see that piece again.
Very true. Very true. So
it's cool.
Got you. So, like, what's the difference now that you kind of see, like, the vintage community popping more this way in North Carolina? Like, compare it to Cali. So now that it's more, like, now that we have something that exists, how would you compare it to Cali?
Okay, so with Cali is already a state. Like, growing up in California, the climate there was always individuality since I was, you know, like, elementary school. You know, it's always been about, you know, who finds the brand first, who hears about a hip-hop artist first and learns the dance from the videos. You know, like, all that stuff played a factor at an early age for us. And the thing that's different about California and North Carolina is we had access to all that stuff. North Carolina doesn't really have the access at all the times. You know, when certain brands drop, you might only see it in California, New York, Tokyo, and London.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you might not even see it in North Carolina, where in California we saw it. So we can go and we can actually be a part of whatever brand was popping right away.
Mm.
So as far as vintage goes, thrifting has been a thing forever in California, where in North Carolina, I feel like the last 5 years, it really caught fire. Like, the last 5 years, I feel like it's, like, been an explosion for North Carolina vintage.
For sure.
In California, it's been a thing since I can remember. Like, you know, whenever I had to go to a high school dance and it was like a Harley Davidson joint or a Hawaiian t-shirt joint, we always went to the thrift stores to get whatever we needed at the time.
Mm.
So, you know, thrifting has been a thing forever. You know, like, that's been a thing for a long time there, opposed to here where it's kind of just catching wind. But at the same time, it's catching wind during the explosion because North Carolina is a hub. So now that we have everybody looking for particular items in the thrift, more grails and more really good pieces are starting to surface because we got everybody out there on the hunt finally.
Right.
You know, so California, everything is pretty much picked through. Like, there's not really a lot of people finding, like, huge scores of, like, 100 rap tees or something like that.
Yeah.
Because that's already done. Like, those moments are already over for California because it's already been done.
Got you.
North Carolina, we still having those moments because, you know, we're a little late to the party in this area. So it's more exciting for us right now than it is for California. California is like, all right, I'm just gonna go to round two, call it a day.
Right. So you believe that there's still like some grails out in these like thrift stores out here in North Carolina.
Oh yeah, but it's bigger than just the thrift stores now. Now it's like it's the old like beauty supply stores. It's the rag houses where you can go and like get a bale with like 5,000 pounds of clothes and dig through it and find some stuff in those. You know, North Carolina has all of that. All of that stuff. I've seen it and been a part of all those type of finds, and it's still happening. You know, like over the last 2 years, there's been tons of those type of come ups, and then there's the ones that we don't even know. You know, there's the guys that's finding it that don't have Instagram and just selling it on eBay.
Right.
You know, so. Right. There's plenty of that still out here. Like, you know, there's still going to be moments. There's still moments that are, like, going to be happening over time. And it may not be rap-related. It might be rock-related. It may be, you know, comic T-shirt-related or whatever, you know. But they're still going to happen.
Gotcha.
Opposed to in California, it's, like, very rare for it to happen now.
Right, that makes sense.
So, yeah.
And that goes into my next question, too, is about, like, particular pieces. So, let's just talk about on a national basis or like a global basis, like what's popping right now as far as in the vintage. Let's talk about, like I said, just nationally or globally right now. What seems to be like the trend right now?
So we're seeing like a lot of trends are coming and going. There's some that have came and are not going anywhere, but, as far as right now, like the explosion for right now has been Marvel, like DC comic, like, you know, like those Wolverine and Spider-Man,
yeah,
Doctor Doom and all these old comic books, T-shirts. That's kind of been the thing. Like, you know, you might see one of those posted on eBay for like 10 grand.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? And it might sell for 4,500. So that's kind of the new explosion, like comic book stuff. So you have a lot of people that are like reaching out to their old comic book stores to see if they have any T-shirts related to the old comics because those are kind of exploding.
Gotcha.
And you know, the ones that are going to stand the test of time is always going to be like your rap T-shirt, your bootleg rap tees, and stuff like that, where you have big screen printing on the front and back of whatever artist that was your favorite back in the day. So, like, you know, I had a Snoop Dogg tee, and it just recently sold for $2,500 or whatever like that. And, yeah, so I've been sitting on this tee forever. I bought it maybe 2 or 3 years ago at a portion of that price, and then somebody posted it, like, 3 weeks ago, and it sold within an hour for $2,500.
Wow.
So, yeah, you have your rap tees and stuff like that that are always going to be, like, a thing because now you have a lot of companies that are, like, trying to develop that, like, spin-off of that. They're trying to make, like, the fast fashion version of it.
Yeah, right, so yep.
You have those companies that are just like, all right, cool, like, these Jordans are coming out. Let's make a shirt that's catered to these Jordans specifically using whatever artist we know everybody loves that looks like a bootleg rap tee. And, you know, they'll be like $30 or $40 instead of like $1,000 or $2,500.
Right.
So that's much more affordable.
Right.
So I see rap tees staying where they are. Marvel tees are on the rise. old Disney t-shirts are on the rise, like old Disney, like villains, like Jafar from, what was that, Lion King. There's all these Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians.
Gotcha.
There's all these old villains that were in Disney movies that now people are like, oh yeah, I remember how creepy that person was. I want that.
Word. So, okay.
Every year is something. Right now, it's also Bulls because you have the Last
Dance. The Last Dance, right.
Yeah, so now everybody wants a Jordan bootleg rap tee or a
I just seen Wiz Khalifa post a picture in a I think it was a Rodman, like a big face Rodman. And I was like,
yeah, now you want, exactly, bro. The Rodman tees went from $60 to $350.
Exactly, bro, in a matter of a week.
Bro, you have Last Dance series come out, and everybody's reminded of how wild Rodman was. Now they have to have that shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So now the person that's been sitting on it is like, oh, you have to have it? Okay, I need $300 now instead of $60.
Yep.
So it's always going to be an explosion, man. Like, every time we have, like, these type of little documentaries come out or whatever they are that's related to, like, something older, you know, there's going to be people that want something from that era. Because right. There's a lot of these kids that don't even remember that era.
Right.
So,
you think so? You think it's the same in North Carolina, or is there a specific? I think NASCAR is, me personally, I think that like NASCAR is in North Carolina is going to always be a thing.
Yeah, we got that. Because don't we have the museum, the Hall of the Museum or Hall of Fame or something like
yeah,
that?
And Charlotte, Charlotte has the whole speedway they have there in Charlotte. So,
right. The Charlotte Motor Speedway. I know they have like a NASCAR museum or something like that. So, you know, a lot of the drivers either lived or raised their kids out here. Some of the famous ones. So I think NASCAR is always, like, this is, they call it like NASCAR County or whatever like that. And I think that's always going to be a thing. But I think NASCAR t-shirts specifically hit because they just match sneakers.
Yeah.
Anything that matches sneakers in North Carolina is going to hit.
Got you.
You know what I mean?
Got you.
North Carolina is driven by the sneakers. It starts from the sneakers, and then they work their way
then
up.
You know, you're right. People hit me up all the time. Yo, you got anything that matched this?
Exactly. Like, I tell people now, like, all, like, customers that are first-timers, I'm like, yo, if you got something you're trying to match with a sneaker, just send me a picture of the sneakers you want to match, and then I'll send you all my options I have available for those sneakers.
That's dope.
Like, that's literally how we do it now, especially working outside of the shop during this period. But yeah, NASCAR tees, they hit because they just match well with sneakers, bro. It's simple.
Do you think there's any other tees that hit hard in North Carolina? Or like that are like trendy, maybe, or trendy right now?
Sports, like Duke, UNC Chapel Hill.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like anything sports related, CIAA tournament tees, you got the Black Bike Week tees that are like catered to South Carolina, which is kind of like a Carolina's thing.
Yeah.
You know, like any of that type of stuff that's like North Carolina related is always going to hit. Like nobody's going to turn down a Duke or a UNC Chapel Hill
tee that
matches.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That stuff hits. Like North Carolina is definitely very sports related when it comes to the vintage.
I definitely agree. We're going to wrap this thing up in a bit, bro. Just really one or two more questions for you. Basically, I just want to know, like, your long-term goals. Like, do you think that you'll be in vintage, like, for the rest of your life? Do you think you're locked in this thing, like, forever? Like, do you think, like, I mean, are you planning on, like, opening multiple shops? Like, just lay us on some, like, some long-term goals.
Okay, so, like, as far as long-term goal, I never saw myself as, like, a shop owner that just, like, sits behind the counter and, like, you know, just, like, serves the community for his whole life and stuff like that. Like, I kind of never saw that as a vision. I kind of just fell into it because, you know, I went to college for business and communication, so I'm naturally, like, a communicational guy. Like, I just, you know, I have communicational skills that kind of get me, like, from point A to point B, you know what I'm saying? Like,
gotcha.
I'm a good conversational person. So I usually, my customers are usually comfortable with dealing with me because the conversation leads up to them. It's not like you're walking in and I'm like, hey, buy that shirt, buy. It's like a whole conversation, and it's a whole vibe that goes into me helping them develop like some type of style for themselves that they want to match around some sneakers, or match around a weekend that they're about to have, or match around a birthday fit or whatever. So it's like, you know, you come in and chill with your homie, and then we have a conversation, and then that leads into what you're looking for.
Right.
So that's the part of the game that I like the most. Like, you know, like having people come in and have a conversation with me about life or clothes or whatever it is, that part I could see myself doing like forever. But, you know, like for now, it's hard to look too far into the future, but for now I just see myself as, you know, having a couple more shops, kind of having like some type of a retirement plan for my future generations, like my kids and my nieces and nephews, because I'm from a generation where, you know, the men in my family didn't go to college or graduate from college. You know, I was the first person in my family as a male to graduate from college.
Word.
So I didn't inherit a business when I was done with school. Like my family weren't in a position to have like a family business that I could take over. So that's kind of how I see myself, is like making some type of a family business to where my nieces and nephews don't have to fend for themselves. Once they're done with school, they can come right into a business that's already established, that's already what they like to do, and doesn't require a lot of work, and they can have something, you know, like to pass on to their kids. So, you know, if this business lasts the test of time, then hopefully I have something to give to them and leave behind for them, and be able to walk away from and still make some type of profit off of, even while they're running it and taking over it. And, you know, just, you know, stuff like that. Like, I kind of just view it as, you know, means to an end. Like, do it until I don't love it anymore, then pass it on to my nieces and nephews that are starting to grow a love for it, and then I can still make that profit off of it while they're running it, type
of thing.
So,
for sure.
You know, that's kind of how I view it. As far as today goes, it might change next year or whatever like that, but as far as today, I kind of just, that's as far as I've gotten as far as thinking ahead.
Okay, that's dope.
Yeah,
like, you know, what is it? What do they say? Like, planting some seeds, basically.
Right. My family always told me that each generation is supposed to live better than the generation before.
Most definitely.
You know, my mom and dad had to grind it out for me to be as comfortable as I am. Now I'm having to grind it out for my nieces and nephews and kids, future kids, to be able to live a little bit better. So now, since I'm laying the groundwork as far as creating some sort of a business, mm-hmm. they'll be able to just take that business over instead of having to go work for somebody else.
Most definitely.
You know, one generation at a time.
For sure. That's love. Last question I got for you, bro, is really, I just want you to have an opportunity to lay out some advice for somebody who's thinking about stepping into the vintage world, reselling, that is. So like, just some advice for a beginner who just is out here thrifting, or somebody who has already thrifted the stuff that they want to sell, and now they're just like, what now, what do I do? So just some advice for that person.
All right, so I bumped into a young thrifter the other day, actually, and he was kind of like, he gravitated toward this bit of information I gave him. So I'll start with that. And it was just, if you want to sell vintage or you want to sell anything, you know, as far as like this category goes, clothing or whatever, it's always easier to sell the stuff if you look the part. So if I want my customers to buy NASCAR tees, I will rock a NASCAR tee to work with a nice pair of shoes, with a nice pair of jeans, to show them how that outfit will look at the end of the day. And then that will make your customer say, okay, cool, that does look good. Actually, I will buy one of those. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things, like, your customers, as you start to develop more and more customer base and more people start trusting you for what you're finding, they're also going to trust you off of how your appearance is. So if you look fresh it's going to be easier to sell to people that are trying to get fresh. So Word. That's a bit of information that I would definitely give to anybody. Like, you know, you're always going to have those people that are, like, really unaware of how to get fresh in the clothes. And if you give them an example, it's easier for them because, you know, a lot of people are coming off of shopping off the mannequins.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever mannequin fit, you know, was in the mall and stuff like that. So if you give them that walking billboard of, like, hey, you know, this is how you can look if you, like, cop for me, or if you get a vintage tee and you got these kicks, you know, your fit will turn out something like this. And a lot of people will be like, okay, cool. You know, that did turn out pretty well. Like, I'm going to try that and put my own spin on it or whatever like that. And as far as, like, other ways of selling stuff, like, there's so many platforms. So you have apps like Mercari, you have apps like Depop, you have apps like eBay, you have apps like Poshmark, OfferUp, Letgo, Instagram. Like, you have all these apps that you can use, you know what I'm saying? You can literally sign up for each one of those apps and put all however many items you want on each app, and over time you'll start to see that they're selling. You know, it just, you know, it takes time. Nothing sells itself, so you have to kind of be persistent with the posting. If you want to sell stuff, you got to make sure that it's not like, all right, here goes my 50 tees that I have to offer, and I'm going to just wait for these.
Just wait for a sale. Right, right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Because most people want to see new stuff.
New
they
stuff,
wanna see
yeah.
That if they're buying stuff, you're getting more you get, stuff.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
They want to see that, like, all right, once I buy these 50 pieces, then what? Are you going to be starting from scratch, or do you have more in the tuck? Or are you going to keep continuously posting stuff? So people are, they feed off of consistency.
For
you
sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, with me. With me, what does it for me is I might post a few things in 1 week, and then the next week I'll come with a whole new batch. I'm not forcing that same piece over and over on the customer. Like, I'm always showing them that, okay, we moving on. If y'all wasn't feeling that, what about this? You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So that's what helps, you know, showing consistency and showing people that you're consistent and you really believe in your craft and you're out here in the field and you're finding stuff consistently. That's what's going to grow your audience, because they know, like, all right, if I miss this, at least next week he'll have something else that I may be able to get my hands on.
Mm.
So that's part of the development of, like, trying to get people to rock with you, is showing consistency and showing how often that you're out here in the field. There's, if you're in North Carolina, there's at least 30 different Goodwills that you can drive to within, like, a 100-mile radius, 200-mile radius, and you'll find something guaranteed at each one.
Oh, facts.
So there's really no excuse, you know what I'm saying, for not being consistent. And like I told you in the beginning of my story, it took 3 to 5 years of just doing that, driving to those 20 Goodwills in a 100-mile radius and just cleaning everything up, putting it away, and then bringing it back out for me to feel like I was ready to go. So there's no excuse, man. Like, if you're trying to have people consistently shop from you, you got to consistently shop for them. You got to be like a personal shopper.
That's real. That's so real. That's great advice. That's real. That's real. Well, appreciate you, man. I think you provided a whole lot of value in this episode, bro. And so I'm going to be passing this on to obviously my audience, but not only my audience, just my homies who do a lot of thrifting and stuff like that. And I'm sure you're going to do the same. Before we dip out, bro, just one last time, if you want to just plug your Instagram and your store and all that good stuff, go ahead.
Word, yeah. This information is, I'm an open book. My store, like I said, is called All Things Rare. I'm located at 1401 East Bessemer, Greensboro, North Carolina, 27405. You can Google it. If you type me in on Google, All Things Rare, I'm one of the top few vintage stores that'll pop up. It'll give you the address and the Google Maps to hit me up. My Instagram is Wicked Wizards. It's WickedWardz. So Wicked Wizards with just a Z at the end. And you can hit me up, man. I'm an open book. I always answer messages right away. I try to help young future entrepreneurs as much as I possibly can. You can find me there and reach out, stop by the store once this quarantine season is over. And I'm an open book, man. I'll have a conversation with you if I can point you in the right direction, give you whatever knowledge I have. I'm always down for it. And Gak, Greg, I appreciate you having me on. Hope this helps a couple people along the way.
For sure.
Definitely talk to you soon, my brother.
For sure. Well, I'll get at you, bro. I'm dropping this episode. I might even drop it today, but whenever I drop it, I'll let you know. So I appreciate you, bro.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Have a good one.
All right, you too, bro.